From Grantham to Beaver Falls, Lansford to Mount Pleasant, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Pennsylvania is considering a state version of the Federal False Claims Act. What is the act, and why would such a state law actually cost the Commonwealth money? David Taylor and our Capital Watch crew have the answer. And while the political class focuses on impeachment, the nation's economy continues to soar to all-time highs. On my town hall commentary, I'll talk about the Beltway Real America disconnect. I'm Loman Henry. Welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to David Taylor and our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. Races for seats in Pennsylvania's state legislature are often sleepy affairs, fought out of the glare of the spotlight, which this year is firmly fixed on the presidential race. But having won legislative majorities in Virginia last year, Democrats are looking to Penns Woods in hopes of taking control of the state House and/or the state Senate, both of which are under Republican control. But national Republicans are fighting back. This past week, Right Lines 2020, a group whose goal is to protect Republican majorities, has placed Pennsylvania in the top tier of its states to protect. Driving the national interest in state legislatures is the redrawing of congressional district lines that will take place in 2021. Legislative control is considered to be a leg up for each party to have more favorable district lines drawn. Pennsylvania has a sordid history of government corruption, and several FBI probes point to potential trouble ahead. According to news reports, more than 30 managers have been fired or retired from the Southeast Regional Pennsylvania Transit Authority, or SEPTA, in the wake of an FBI investigation. The investigation reportedly focuses on the alleged misuse of credit cards and fraudulent invoicing. Meanwhile, an alleged real estate scheme has prompted a federal lawsuit in the city of Harrisburg, where the city's mayor and others are accused of abusing their power for personal enrichment. The FBI is reportedly involved in that investigation as well. And the chairman of the State House Environmental Resources and Energy Committee, Daryl Metcalf, has threatened Governor Tom Wolf's administration with legal action if it tries to implement the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or REGI, without legislative approval. According to the Center Square, Wolf signed an executive order directing the Department of Environmental Resources to begin moving toward joining the nine-state compact. REGI is essentially a cap-and-trade tax on energy producers, the implementation of which would result in higher fuel costs for Pennsylvania consumers. Calling Wolf a, quote, rogue governor, Metcalf vowed to fight any plan that does not go before the General Assembly for approval. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. It is known as the False Claims Act, and some lawmakers are proposing a state version of what currently is covered under federal law. However, such a state law would primarily benefit lawyers who stand to reap big fees under such a proposal. Our Capital Watch crew is here to explain what the act is and why a state version is a bad idea. Kurt Schroeder from the Pennsylvania Coalition for Civil Justice Reform joins Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business and David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Rebecca Euler, Legislative Director for the National Federation of Independent Business in Pennsylvania. Rebecca, thank you so much for being on the program.
Great to be back again, David. Thank you.
Well, you know, there's a whole panoply of issues that we have to deal with in state government as we, you know, advocate for a pro-growth, pro-jobs agenda in the public policy arena. And, you know, every so often you hear somebody come up with a proposal. It's like, there's no downside. It's like, well, you know, as mom taught us, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Absolutely.
And so we are going to talk about the latest plan, a state false claims act. Everybody's opposed to, you know, fraud and waste and abuse, and so this is being sold as some sort of silver bullet. And anyway, unfortunately, our friends are mistaken, and our opponents are trying to pull a fast one. So to help us and to help the listeners to understand exactly what this is, very pleased to welcome our friend Kurt Schroeder, the executive director of the Pennsylvania Coalition for Civil Justice Reform. Kurt, thanks for taking time to be with us.
Hello, David and Rebecca. Thank you for having me. I greatly appreciate it.
So I guess just to bat lead off, in terms of a False Claims Act, Kurt, correct me if I'm wrong, Pennsylvania is already governed by the Federal False Claims Act. So it's not as if there's some sort of policy area where there's no guidance or no means of redress. Is that correct?
Exactly. And that's part of what makes this legislation so insidious. You know, it sounds so good on the surface, just as you mentioned. Who in their right mind would be against clamping down on Medicaid abuse? No one's in favor of Medicaid abuse.
Correct.
Every taxpayer out there has an interest in seeing that Medicaid dollars are spent properly, that people aren't getting unduly, you know, rich off of providing those services, that the taxpayers are getting their money's worth. So no one wants to see Medicaid abuse or fraud. And when a piece of legislation like a State False Claims Act comes along and it's being promoted by those supporting it as a way for Pennsylvania to recoup misspent Medicaid dollars. Well, that sounds pretty good to everyone,
mm-hmm.
you know, legislators and the public alike, because everyone wants to get back money, you know, for the state that is being misspent. A couple problems here, though, like
yes.
you just said. One, there is already a federal False Claims Act that applies to Medicaid. So there's not a single Medicaid claim in Pennsylvania that is not eligible to be brought under the federal act. All right? So
yes.
there's no need for this duplicative legislation.
Mm-hmm.
But that's only the start of it. It gets a lot worse.
Please.
as you peel back the layers
uh-huh.
of a False Claims Act. Because what you don't realize at first is that under a Medicaid False Claims Act here in Pennsylvania will actually recover fewer misspent Medicaid dollars than it would if we just continue recovering under the federal act alone.
And that's the opposite of what the advocates have been saying. How is that so?
It's the exact opposite, because they're only looking at part of the picture, all right? What the part they're looking at is that if Pennsylvania enacts a state False Claims Act, and if it is in compliance with the federal False Claims Act, in other words, it's modeled along the same lines, pretty much the same language, then Pennsylvania will get an extra 10% recovery that it's not getting right now for Medicaid dollars. Now, that sounds pretty good. And, you know, to a legislator, if you say, hey, that's a no-brainer, why wouldn't we go for an extra 10%? Pennsylvania will get 10% more. The feds will get 10% less on their recovery. We'll make out better, right, here in Pennsylvania? Well, no.
Too good to be true.
Yeah, you have to go the next step. Where Pennsylvania loses money under that scenario is something called the quitom plaintiff or the relator.
Yeah.
They are individual bounty hunters.
They're bounty hunters. There's the bounty hunter provision, and they get their piece of the action. They get a take.
They get their piece of the action. The bounty hunter brings the case, actually, and because they bring the case under the State False Claims Act, they are entitled to get upwards of 30% of the recovery. So the state's getting, on the one hand, you know, it's taking from one pocket and putting it in the other, robbing Peter to pay Paul, in essence. The state's getting 10% more in recovery for Medicaid dollars. That's good. But out of that recovery, the state is paying the Ketam plaintiff or bounty hunter upwards of 30% of the recovery. And when you do the math and it nets out, Pennsylvania loses money in that scenario.
Kurt, how does the bounty hunter make out then in that situation? How does the relator make out?
Well, the bounty hunter in this case, you know, makes out like a bandit, frankly. And right. So does the bounty hunter's attorney. The bounty hunter collects, if we enact the State False Claims Act, the bounty hunter will continue to collect from the federal part of the recovery. But under the current federal State False Claims Act, they don't collect anything from Pennsylvania's portion of the recovery. But if we enact the State False Claims Act, the bounty hunter will now get their 20 to 30% from both the federal recovery and the state's portion of the recovery. So they will get paid twice, and their attorneys will get paid twice. And this brings up another serious and unfortunate issue with a State False Claims Act. Like I said, the more you peel back the layers, the more you discover. In a State False Claims Act, the Ketam plaintiff, they get to bring the suit, but the attorney general then gets to a period of time where they review the claim and the lawsuit that's brought under the False Claims Act, and the attorney general can decide to take over the prosecution, if you will, of the case. The attorney general is most likely going to take those cases that are good cases, okay, that they believe they have a fair shot at getting a recovery for the Commonwealth. The cases the attorney general rejects, however, because they're no good, well, the Ketam plaintiff can still push forward and bring that case on his or her own. So what you have, as you just stated, is the bounty hunter, the so-called Ketam plaintiff, and their attorney, who are acting in the role as the Commonwealth's prosecutor here, and they're bringing the case even after the attorney general rejected it in this situation. So what does that do? That only leads to, you know, more unmeritorious and frivolous claims. That's a recipe for frivolous claims, which burden business. Because if the attorney general had taken the case, most likely it's not going to be frivolous. But if it's frivolous, the attorney general is not going to want anything to do with it, you know, is the reality. Yet the plaintiff's attorney and the Ketam attorney, herself, the bounty hunter, they can keep moving forward with a claim that has already been deemed frivolous by the attorney general. And so what they do is they do that, and they hope for a quick settlement, so they get a few bucks out of it. Meanwhile, who does that hurt? That hurts our employers, our businesses, the productive sector of society.
Yes.
That is out there employing people, creating jobs, researching and developing new drugs and equipment and things like that. They're the ones that get hurt on this, and the bounty hunter and the bounty hunter's attorney, they just take the check to the bank and cash it.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Rebecca Euler from NFIB Pennsylvania, and our special guest, Kurt Schroeder, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Coalition for Civil Justice Reform.
Kurt, to your point about more litigation making things more difficult and expensive for employers and businesses in the state, I'm thinking back to what you were talking about, how awards, they're double dipping. They're getting a bigger award, these bounty hunters, as a result of these lawsuits. To the extent stakes are higher, are they, do you think, less likely to agree to a settlement so early? And in that case, are lawsuits going to be longer, more intense, and take more resources away from, businesses, and even in some cases, I guess, the government, if the government's involved?
Yes, all the above. All the above, Rebecca.
I'm just seeing this balloon out of control.
It's a recipe for increased litigation, delaying of settlements, increased harassment of the healthcare and businesses in Pennsylvania. So this state act is, like I said, a very insidious piece of legislation. Sounds good when you first hear about it.
Yeah.
It's easy to promote. But, boy, as soon as you start peeling back the layers and you see what it really does and the devastating impact that it will have on healthcare, on pharmaceutical companies, on businesses in general in the Commonwealth, it's a real problem. It will just lead to a litigation bonanza here in Pennsylvania to benefit the trial attorneys. The trial attorneys will then have more money to make more donations, political donations to politicians,
right,
continue to do their bidding in the General Assembly.
Well, and that's exactly what we don't want any more of, that Pennsylvania, you know, Pennsylvania has a very serious problem with lawsuit abuse, that Philadelphia may be America's lawsuit abuse capital. And this is the whole reason why groups like PMA and NFIB and the doctors in the hospitals and the nursing homes and basically, like you were saying, the whole productive sector, this is why we have banded together to become the Pennsylvania Coalition for Civil Justice Reform, because this is a, you know, lawsuit abuse is, it's just another tax on our economy, our society, and it holds us back. And insofar as Pennsylvania has it worse than other states, that's a disincentive for for people to practice medicine here, for people to locate and invest in a business here and hire people. It's a drag. Absolutely. on our whole economy, our whole society.
Absolutely. And there's a couple other provisions that I might point out.
Please,
Dave and Rebecca, that are terrible about the State False Claims Act. First of all, it imposes, so-called treble damages. In other words, if a jury comes in and says, well, there's $1 million in damages here, well, the act triples them, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it imposes treble damages. In addition to that, it imposes civil penalties per false claim, and it imposes costs and attorney's fees, and that's in addition to the recovery that the bounty hunter gets, keep in mind. But there's no requirement of the need to show any intent to defraud the government. So let's...
No, wait one, a minute, wait yeah, a minute.
Make,
Say that again.
Clear.
Say
wanna,
that again.
I want to make clear, no one is defending fraudulent activity here. No one is defending, billing the government, billing Medicaid, for fraudulent claims or for, puffing up a claim to, get more money than you should. No one is saying that that is acceptable, and that's not what we're fighting against. But what we do is we have a very egregious penalty system in this piece of legislation where you don't have to show fraud. It can be a much lower level of knowledge or fault, and yet the company, the health system, whatever it might be, still gets hit with the with treble damages, with penalties, with costs and attorney's fees, without any showing of intent to commit fraud.
So you're saying a mistake in coding in the billing, if it's brought to the attention of litigators through this False Claims Act, could lead to a virtual bonanza for trial lawyers.
It possibly could, Rebecca. And one more disturbing thing about that example you used. The person, let's say it's an employee within a hospital who was actually involved in submitting the false claim, perhaps creating the false claim. You know what they can do? They can become a Ketom plaintiff.
No.
So they're not barred from that.
They can become their own bounty hunter. They can be the bounty hunter to report on their own activity and take the company to court under the Fair Claims Act.
That's terrifying.
Under the False Claims Act, rather. And... Oh, well, the law does recognize that maybe that's a little shady. So what it says is the court doesn't have to impose, you know, or give them their full recovery. They can reduce it in that situation. But, I mean, just think about what it's saying. Okay, the court can reduce the recovery, but they can still get a recovery in a right. situation where the bounty hunter themselves were the ones involved in the abuse.
Well, that's just
insane.
In the
Medicaid abuse. It's one that most legislators do not at this point yet have a deep depth of knowledge about. They know what they've heard. You know, they've heard, hey, we looks like we'll be able to get more Medicaid dollars back, recovered for that was misspent. Okay, that sounds great. But they don't really understand, one, that's not true, and two, there are a lot of other very concerning provisions in this bill.
If our leaders want to address Medicaid fraud, what we need to do is to double the staff in the Attorney General's office of people who are investigating and fighting this. Looking at the example of other states, if you really want to go to the heart of the problem, you've got to increase the capacity of the enforcing agency to enforce, and that would be a much better avenue of approach than to have this duplicative state False Claims Act and the Pandora's box of problems that it would open. Kurt, we are running low on time, but we are so grateful that you were here with us with the program. For people who are listening, where can they go to learn more about you and the organization and the work that you're doing?
Yes, we're the Pennsylvania Coalition for Civil Justice Reform. We can be found at our website, www.pafor civil justice reform.org.
Okay, outstanding. Kurt, thanks so much. And Rebecca, where can people find you?
They can find NFIBPA at nfib.com/PA or on Facebook or Twitter.
Excellent. As ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So from Rebecca and me, thanks again to our guest, Kurt Schroeder, and thanks to all of you for listening. We'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Virtually everyone not living in a cave in Afghanistan knows there is a giant disconnect between Washington, D.C.'s inside the Beltway political elites and real America. It can be persuasively argued that this disconnect finally reached critical mass in 2016, resulting in the election of Donald J. Trump to the presidency. The early days of 2020 show that, as the president systematically accomplishes his populist agenda, that gulf is widening. This as the twin political dramas of an impeachment trial in the Senate and voting in the 2020 presidential primaries and caucuses take the spotlight. It is important to not think of the Beltway mentality geographically. Clearly, President Trump, who currently resides there, does not suffer from that worldview. The current messengers of the left are out stumping on the presidential campaign trail, taking them far away from the banks of the Potomac. The nation's capital is transfixed by the impeachment of Donald Trump, so much so that those residing there actually think it matters. They make sonorous pronouncements about the seriousness of the matter, how history weighs heavily on the proceedings. They solemnly parade through the Capitol Rotunda, carrying their precious articles of impeachment like a graven idol to be placed upon an altar for worship. Meanwhile, outside of the Beltway, real America has tired of the charade. Polls show voter support for impeachment falling, while President Trump's approval ratings move ever upward. In several key battleground states, late-year polling showed the president moving ahead of his potential Democratic rivals, even as the House of Representatives cast its votes to impeach him. Despite this, and despite the frivolity of the charges, the United States Senate is bound by the Constitution to perform its due diligence and sit as a jury to determine whether or not to remove the president from office. A two-thirds vote is required for that to happen, so it will not. Although we will be subjected to several more weeks of this drama, we all know how the story ends. As Congress wallows in its impeachment fantasy, the nation moves on with serious business. In just 1 week, President Trump concluded months of talks with China and signed phase one of the new trade agreement. While much work remains to be done and additional agreements will be forthcoming, inking of the deal was a landmark achievement. And then there is the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Free Trade Agreement. A final accord was reached months ago, but the agreement languished in the House of Representatives while Nancy Pelosi and her minions focused on impeachment. The House finally approved the plan, and a large bipartisan Senate vote quickly followed. The president then triumphantly signed the accord. Like the president, the nation has continued to move forward while the impeachment saga continues. The equity markets are notoriously skittish. The slightest bit of negative news can spike huge drops in the markets. Markets, as does business in general, especially hate uncertainty. You would think nothing would inject more uncertainty into the economy than the possible removal of a president from office via the impeachment process. Yet as the House moved its two articles of impeachment and the Senate trial got underway, the markets hit all-time highs. Job creators also appear to be unaffected. The nation's economy continues to add new jobs at a brisk pace, while unemployment hovers at or near historic lows. Groups that have traditionally suffered the highest unemployment rates have especially benefited from the robust jobs climate. Clearly, the movers and shakers of the U.S. economy are not taking impeachment seriously. President Trump is going about doing his job, continuing to post wins in trade and other policy objectives, and voters appear ready to move on to the legitimate electoral process about to unfold. The world of Beltway insiders, once again, bears no semblance to the outside world. That the nation has moved on to great accomplishments while insiders have been distracted by impeachment not only proves the disconnect is real and growing, but that the elites who think so much of themselves are, in fact, largely irrelevant. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. And it is time to talk about the 2020 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is the premier gathering of grassroots conservatives every year in the Keystone State. This year's conference will be held March 27th and 28th at the Radisson Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. Fox News contributor Jason Chaffetz will be the featured dinner speaker. Former U.S. Senator Rick Santorum will dress the conference breakfast. There will be additional speakers, panel presentations, workshops, and networking. For complete information and to register for the 2020 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, go to paleadershipconference.org. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, lincolnradiojournal.com and lincolninstitute.org. For 25 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WPRV-FM in Clearfield, WRVI-FM in St. Mary's, along with WRJV-FM in Breezewood, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.
We'll be right back.